Fan Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Yeah. The numbers are gory.
You're supposed to be like, hey, we're here. I'm the one supposed to be like, ugh, God, the sun.
Yeah. It's the series is not over, obviously. The Leafs are only down 2-1. And they've slayed the dragon that is winning against the Boston Bruins this season. They finally did that in game two, right?
Yeah, but that's
had a lead against the Bruins this season.
It's like their backup dragon they slayed, though. The dragon still there in Swayman.
Yeah. Over his last six starts, he's 6-0 against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Goals against average of 1.31. Save percentage, is this good? 9.59. And I know we keep
Seems
doing this
very
thing.
Good.
Okay, and again, shout out to Down Goes Brown, who brought this statistic. It's not even a statistic. This fact to light that I didn't even think about. And yeah, Braden Holtby, you don't necessarily think about as a Vezina winner, but he had one.
True.
In each and every series Maple Leafs have played over the Austin Matthews era, they faced at least a Vezina goalie in each series, right? Like, and that happened because they faced Linus Ullmark in game two, who they hope they get to face in game four. But I gotta think.
And said especially, it before, I'll say it again, you're not man enough, Jim Montgomery. You're not man enough.
I gotta think that he, you know, and you can, even if you were still of the belief, well, the part of what's made these guys so good is that they have the extra rest. Well, you got an extra day off between games three and four for Jeremy Swayman. Yeah, Jeremy Swayman is the guy right now and might be the guy that we're talking about who's emerging as one of the guys right over the next half decade to a decade. There's no excuses for anything, right? But and all the goalies are good, most of them. There are the occasional not-so-good ones. And honestly, maybe the Leafs ran into one in the first round last year where Andrei Vasilevsky's headed to the Hall of Fame. That was not a Hall of Fame performance from him.
No.
And he went into an offseason where he had surgery, right? And the first half of this season, when he finally returned, he looked like not the same version of himself.
Does feel a little different in hindsight than it did in the moment, that's for sure.
Sure. So where, how do you begin to have the conversation about this Maple Leafs offense, which should be, it doesn't matter who you put in goal, right? Yep. And you want to win a Stanley Cup, you definitely have to play some good goalies.
Yep.
Maple Leafs created more than enough to win yesterday. Maybe not on the power play, but yeah, a different goalie in net. Honestly, Linus Ullmark in net, maybe they win that hockey game. How do you have that conversation about Maple Leafs facing goalies that are really good?
It's really tough to have that conversation when the thing we're supposed to be saying in these series is, and look, like, goaltenders are more likely, it seems like, to get hot and steal a series than any one player.
Yeah.
You know, is like Sidney Crosby, the de facto playoff killer, the guy we just, it's like, it's still infinitely more likely that Tristan Jarry or Flower was going to steal a series for the Penguins than it was Crosby just because of the nature of the position. But it's, I think the reason why it's so tough to talk about is because the thing you're supposed to be talking about in series with the Leafs is, yeah, okay, the goalie's good. You're supposed to be talking about how good the Leafs forwards are.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing you're supposed to be talking about. And we've had one game where we talked about how good one of those guys was, but that's not enough. And I think the other problem is that that's fine when you look at individual series. When you say, okay, they ran into a Vezina winner in Vasilevsky the first year, and you saw what they've seen out of Swayman this year. In a 1 year, when you're having a 1 year referendum, it's a fair thing to say, well, look what they ran into. How could you possibly have beat that? Or look how tough it was going to beat that. But when the sample size evolves past one season, two seasons, three seasons, we're at year seven of the Matthews era now, it's a little hard to just say, well, they keep running into good goalies. You're going to have to beat one eventually.
Yeah. And factually, the Vegas Golden Knights were capable of beating Sergei Bobrovsky in the Stanley Cup final. You're like, well, that's what we're supposed to be talking about with this team. Yeah, you're able, like they beat Jeremy Swayman twice yesterday, fired 30 shots, fire 50. Yep. Like, get more on net. You're capable of more. All right, time now for our insider brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. It is Devin Dubnyk, former NHL goaltender, currently NHL Network analyst. How's it going, Devin?
Good, good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for doing this. I want to start with this because, man, Ilya Samsonov looked so good for so much of yesterday's game. And, you know, that goal he allows to Trent Frederick, not ideal. But it happens as, like, there's a sparring session between Tyler Bertuzzi and Brad Marchand is happening at center ice, and the crowd is noticing it, and the announcers are noticing it, and apparently the referees aren't noticing it. But it's like, it's obviously the center of so much attention. Could something like that impact a goaltender's, their own attention? Like, could their attention be drawn away from the play at hand? Could that have impacted the reason why he allows Trent Frederick to go short side on him?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you're going to notice it for a second, but you're also going to notice the guy flying down the wing by himself too. Like, you're not going to not play that. I'm usually the last one that wants to say something bad about goalies, because he was incredible up to that point. But that's a bad one. That's a tough one, because if you watch the replay, he's on the boards. You know, like, it looks like a great shot, but that just should never go in. And, you know, the timing of it wasn't very good either. I don't think there's anything he could do on the second one. I don't know if that – I couldn't tell watching the replay if that initial shot got to him. If it did, then I love the rebound, but I think it just hits the brusque and drops, and so he has no chance there. And
no, it hit his glove, I thought.
Marchand's shot, so. No, oh, I, did it? So yeah, maybe he could have hung on to that one. But
I thought on the power play goal he could have gloved that one, and obviously, yeah, it's a difficult play. It's not like the Frederick goal.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, again, I'm not like – don't – it's a tie game, and there's lots of time left. But that's a tough one. Like, there's not really any excuse for that first goal from where it was shot from. If it's on the faceoff dot, fine. But like, it's the boards, and there's zero threat on the other side. So he really, you know, he was kind of deep. He was kind of off angle in the middle of the net, and it just looked like he didn't get a read off the stick.
Yeah, it was weird. Yeah, I'm with you. It was brutal.
Already was.
Yeah, I know. That's the other part of it, right? Is you the Leafs didn't lose that game because he lets that goal in, but it's such a hinge point moment. On the flip side of things, with what's going on in Boston's net, I feel like this is a very obvious answer, but maybe you can put it in a more illuminating light than I'm able to. How important is it for the Leafs to kind of get something going against Swayman here? Because we've seen this in the playoffs where goalies start out and everyone, you know, Swayman's been good heading into the playoffs, but they start feeling it and you start winning games and it just feels like these guys truly become unbeatable. How important is it? I mean, forget for the Leafs, but for the rest of the Eastern Conference, for them to kind of get one past Swayman before he just gets into that almost like, you know, J.S. Jaeger zone we saw, oh God, like 15 years ago now.
Yeah, well, you certainly look like that now. And I heard you guys talking just before I came on. I mean, they got it. They have to. It's, I mean, it almost turns into a mental thing on both sides, where you got Swayman probably feels like he can't be scored on by Toronto, and Toronto probably feels like they can't score on him. So, and you know what? I mean, he was incredible last night, and it's not just he just looks like he's not going to get scored on.
Yeah,
you know, and I thought Toronto played extremely well. You know, Boston is. So, like, when you watch the game, it's so difficult for Toronto to get the puck through. You know, they've got possession. They're moving it around. But Boston is just – it just looks like there's no room in their end, even though Toronto's got the puck. And you look, it's like – and how frustrating is it when it feels like they can't beat them, so they do what you should, throw a puck to the net, mm-hmm. get a lucky bounce. Probably it felt like the only way the puck was going to go by them was something like that. And then – next play to the back of your net again. I mean, that's tough, especially when you got in the next shift, you lose a 2-on-3 battle behind the net. Mm. Like that's how you lose a game. Mm.
It's been a tough near 60 years, but yeah, no, that was especially tough. Like under a minute later, and for it to be Brad Marchand too, it had to be Brad Marchand, didn't it? Like, of course, yeah, no, naturally,
yeah, for sure. But that just can't happen. I mean, the next shift, they worked so hard to get that second goal, and I mean, yes. You look at the chances, crazy chances they had in front of the net. I was watching, I thought Bertuzzi's that he kind of that it bounced on him and hit the post. I thought that was in the back of the net. Mm-hmm. They had one, they had like two other ones. They worked so hard to get a goal, and then they go behind their net and lose a battle. It's just no reason for that puck to come out front to Marchand.
Nope, it's been these like one little hinge point moments in these postseason games where everything's magnified.
And there wasn't much. Like they were playing really well defensively too.
Well, but this is the problem though. When you're only going to score two goals in a hockey game, or God forbid, the one game they won, they scored three. It's an NHL record though, three goals or fewer in 10 straight postseason games. And part of that is the goaltending that they face, and Swayman's been awesome, and even Allmark was great in a loss in game two. But yeah, it's just the, I don't know, do you view it as a goaltending issue, or the Leafs just not creating enough offense?
It's gotta be both. I mean, like you look at the goalies they've run into, like it's been Vasilevskiy, who they were able to solve last year, but Bobrovsky, they got Vasilevskiy, they played Tampa twice in a row, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so it was Vasilevskiy for twice. Then after Vasilevskiy, Bobrovsky. Now they got Swayman and Allmark, and they obviously solved Allmark, but not Swayman. So, I mean, these are some of the best of the best. So, that are also playing at the top of their game. So that's definitely part of it. I think they got, I don't know, and I'm a goalie talking, so I'm not an offense coach, but I think you got to change it up a little bit. Like, just watching Marner a little bit, and, you see the way they score some of these just ridiculous highlight reel goals during the regular season, crisscrossing and making these ridiculous passes. And I was kind of watching Marner a little bit last night, and he played well, but I saw it like kind of in the offensive zone, and he's weaving and trying to make one of these plays that was working in the regular season, but it's playoffs, and the way Boston's playing, there's just no room. Like he kind of slows it down, but they're on him right away. Like the intensity is more, and there's just less room. So those plays aren't there. You almost have to change it up. Like it's not taking away creativity, but it might just be more pucks at the net, more pucks and bodies. And like I said, you look at that second goal, this is not how Toronto usually scores their goals, but they're not scoring goals. So they might just have to get a little grimy and try to get pucks through, which is easier said than done with the way Boston plays in their own end.
Well, yeah, and the idea that, I mean, Auston Matthews, I like his chances to beat anybody clean, but outside of him, the idea that you're just, walking in and, tic-tac-toe and it's backdoor on Swayman, it just doesn't feel like that's happening right now. You mentioned the Bertuzzi. I mean, he gets the goal there. The one goes off his leg. There's the other one. I was right there with you. I thought it was in too. A little premature celebration on my couch watching that one.
Because it looked like it was in the back of the net.
Yes. I thought it was for sure. And I guess the thing is do you think the Leafs, we've talked a lot about here. We've spent a lot of time talking about how different this group is, but do you think they have enough players to kind of play that style? I mean, the fourth line's been great, but they're not out there to score you a goal. And when you look at the Leafs' third line, I mean, you like Yarncroc, he's a fine player, but as you go down the lineup, it's not the heaviest team here. If the Leafs do need to play, if they do need to play a style getting to the front of the net and just scoring these greasy, grimy goals, they certainly have some guys who are more than capable of doing it. But do you think, I mean, even missing guys like Nylander, who we don't think of, but he scores a ton of greasy area goals. Do they have the right personality to kind of play that way against this Boston team, do you think?
I think they do because, I love the Bertuzzi and Domi. Those guys, there's two guys you added that are more than willing to go there. But it's not even just like, it's not just parking a guy in front of the net. I think it's just shooting more. Like you watch them and they're moving the puck around. And again, it's like Boston is hard. You watch the Toronto move it around. And I mean, it would be frustrating because they've got the puck and they're moving it, but it seems like every time one guy gets the puck, the Boston guy's right there. And there's just doesn't seem to be any room. So, it's not changing the strategy because they spent a lot of time in the offensive zone. So they don't need guys to go stand in the front of the net. But I'm saying, obviously you need to go there, but throw pucks just rip pucks at the net, rip it across the net. Like, you've seen how it hits guys and, you know, hits a guy in the back and pops out to the slot on your tape, like, just chaos. And, you know, you don't all of a sudden need big bodies to just go stand in front of the net and get cross-checked and try to screen the goalie. I just think you got to rip pucks there and see what happens, because that the tic-tac-toe backdoor tapping just isn't there. I mean, I guess it was in the first goal, but for the most part, it's just not there. So you just got to try to get something grimy.
I mean, the best reason to, and the most logical reason to believe the Maple Leafs are going to win this series is, man, Jim Montgomery started Linus Ullmark in game two after Jeremy Swayman had a pretty similar game one. I can't imagine he does it again in game four, but this was like...
I think he will.
You think Ullmark starts on Saturday?
I think he will.
I agree. I think it's nuts,
that's
but I think
nuts.
You're right.
That's cuckoo bananas.
I know it is, but I think that the reason is because I think if you're Jim Montgomery and the coaching staff and you decide to do this rotation and they committed to it, obviously putting Ullmark in game two after Swayman's game one, that I think they must have committed to it for at least five games, because they're not gonna do it and then, you know, this happens and Ullmark played really well in game two.
You're right.
And so if they're going to say we're going to do this rotation, I think Jim Montgomery's a great coach and he's a confident coach. So I feel like there had to be a commitment to like at least game five, because you put in Ullmark, if you lose, Swayman goes game five. Okay. You already got Swayman coming back anyway. And from there, I think, you know, if it was 3-2 Boston and he won all three and Ullmark had lost two, then you change it up. But my guess is that they've committed to this for five games.
Okay, I agree. I want to be clear. I agree with everything that's being said. I agree.
God.
It's nuts. I agree that's what's going to happen.
Oh, my God.
Help us get a little insight here. I mean, we talk so much about the psychological aspect, like Ilya Samsonov, it's like we're afraid to say his name too many times in a show because maybe it sets him off. The idea that you have a guy in Ullmark who is the reigning Vezina Trophy winner, but they also tried to trade him at the deadline, and everyone is wondering if they're going to go back to him. He plays well. They still lose that game. Throw in the other side of it. Swayman's going, it seems like I'm the heir apparent here, and all I do is win and stand on my head. Obviously, these guys get along well. I don't think this thing they're doing is an act. But, man, what must it be like inside that goalie tandem right now? I mean, they're both saying the right things, but let's be honest, they both want the net every single night as well.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
Did you see Swayman's comments? I was quite surprised by that.
What, where he said, like, about time that I got the start in game one?
He said, let me see. It was something about he doesn't need to rest. He wants to keep going.
Oh, yeah.
And for me personally, I don't want to rest. I just want to keep playing. That's the first time I've ever heard something like usually they're just repeating the message, you know?
Right.
That's my buddy. This is what we do. We both play. We both win. Everything's great. That's the first time I've ever. And I don't know why he'd say something like that, because I don't disagree with him. And I, of course, that's how he feels, because you can pretend. But of course, when he's playing like this, he wants to play. But this is already such a hot topic. Why would you say something like that?
Yeah.
You just now you get to talk about it for the entire 24 hours today.
48. They don't play till Saturday.
Spectacle. Yeah. 48. Yeah. So you get to talk about it for the next 2 days in the morning skate, guessing who's going to be playing. If it's Ullmark, now they're going to be asking Swayman after the game. What do you how, like? It's just, why would you say that after all this time of spewing the right message, you're going to bring it up now?
Honestly, this hasn't been a huge topic of conversation on this show through 2.5 hours today, because I thought, like, okay, you're not insane enough to do it, considering the body of work that we have all season long of Jeremy Swayman against the Toronto Maple Leafs and in these two games in the postseason. But the more I think about it, like if it was your plan from the outset, there's really nothing that's happened other than Jeremy Swayman winning the games and playing well. But yeah, that was very much within the realm of possibility when you set out to do this. Allmark played well in a loss in game two. There really is, like if that was your plan, there's no reason. If you must have been aware of the possibility of this taking place, and yeah, there's exactly. really nothing that has happened here other than like the W's next to the guy's name, which
just winning games in the playoffs.
Nothing, but like there's nothing that has really happened that should dissuade you if that was your plan.
Yeah, and you had, like I said, you have to commit to it, or it just almost looks even more silly.
Yes.
Because, like you said, you had to have known when you're going into this thing that they're going to split games that this was a possibility.
Yes.
And so you can't pull the plug after one rotation. You know, I don't think that's a good look either. But I mean, I guess they don't care what it looks to try to win games. But that's why I just don't think they had to have agreed to some sort of commitment to stick to it. And I just think it's five games because, like I said, if it's 3-2 Boston after five games and Swayman's won all of them, I don't think you can switch back at that point.
Well, it's just nuts. I think it's a realistic possibility, if not a likely one. Devin, this was great as always. Thanks, man.
Yep, thanks, guys.
Devin Dubnyk, former NHL goaltender, currently an NHL Network analyst. He was our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Like, honestly, even in, like, the panels after the game, I'm like, oh, why are you even bringing it up? Like, it's clearly done now. But, like, yeah, I guess it's not. If I was a Bruins fan.
Oh, my God.
Contemplating this possibility. It's like, it's one thing. Like, yeah, listen, they know more than you. They've spent a lifetime in hockey. I'm sorry. Yeah. Like, there's a sports thing happening here.
Watch the game, un-nerd.
Oh, my God. I Linus Allmark is in net for the first second of Saturday's game, and I was a Bruins fan. I don't know if I'd be able to watch. I mean, you would watch the game, but you'd have this pit in your stomach, especially even if it plays out the same way as game two did. Linus Allmark didn't lose in the game, and it's even, like, I don't think Ilya Samsonov lost them the game yesterday, but there was one goal where you're like,
yep.
There was none of that in game two for Allmark. He was just like, and there were some spectacular goals from him. Even if it plays out the same way in a loss and you're still going back home with home ice advantage, I'd be apoplectic, honestly, if I was a Bruins fan.
You know, we talk a lot about like goaltending matchup and the Leafs seemingly always losing it. I think for once, the Leafs don't have the coach who's most overthinking things in a series.
If that happens.
Yeah, again, like it's entirely possible he just wakes up and goes, what am I doing here? How about the guy who wins all the time starts? It's nuts. I think they do go to him. Like I had this thought last night. It's nuts. I agree with everybody that it should be Swayman. I'm just going to say it again. And I'm sure there's no way this comes back to bite me on Saturday night. I don't think you're man enough to do it, Jim Montgomery. You stick to your guns. Yeah. You're the Jack Adams coach. You don't let anybody talk you out of this. Not even us or Devin Dubnyk, who thinks it's a crazy idea. And I agree with him, but I do think they're going to go back to Allmark. I think the way that game two played out, only emboldened him more because Allmark was good in the way last year played out. You can make a good decision that's the wrong one. I think that's what Montgomery did in game two, and I think it's very, very... I'll even go as far as to say it likely that that's what he does for game four.
I don't think it's like... I still think, like, cooler heads prevail here. There's got to be somebody screaming in his ear.
Yeah, and Jeremy Swayman, probably.
I was just going to say, like, maybe it's Jeremy Swayman.
Well, that's the other part that makes this so odd is that... You could see it if it was the other way. Mm-hmm. If Swayman was the guy who's on his way out and Allmark is the heir apparent and you go, okay, like we can't.
Like if there was a Joe Wall, like Ilya Samsonov
but
situation.
But it's the opposite. Yeah. Joe Wall is the guy who's good. And again, Allmark very good. Possibly stands on his head.
And he's
possibly
also
steals
under
like three
contract
games.
For next year.
Right. It's one not as though he's gone, but like he's pretty much gone.
Yeah.
It goes without saying.
So. What it feels like is happening at 25 years old, that Jeremy Swayman is turning into like the next one.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it feels like is happening. And, like...
Yes, you know what? We should talk about how the infallible Jeremy Swayman could certainly never have a bad playoff game. I agree with you. We should just talk about that. You're right. He feels... If you play... I always like to play this game with all the goalies we get on. I didn't do it today. I'm just like, okay, game seven. You got one period left to play. Who's your goalie? It's not about future. It's about right now. There's a 10% chance when we're playing that game 6 months from now, Jeremy Swayman is the guy for a lot of people. He is right on track to be one of those dudes. So, yeah, it's you often think that you make bad decisions when you have no good options, but apparently having two, wouldn't that be a great thing to have? Imagine having too many good options.
Yeah, it'd be quite a thing. I can't.
Instead of like, Martin Jones is competent enough.
Yeah. I mean, we got, you know, Edmonton Oilers here with Stuart Skinner and his .870 career postseason save percentage. And
the Kings who tried to trade for him, getting undone by their goaltending in game one of that series.
The Avalanche still, like, being Stanley Cup contenders with
a shooter-tooter in that.
It's, and the Bruins are like, we got the reigning Vezina guy who nobody wants to start game four, despite the fact that he was really good in game two.
The reigning Vezina winner.
Yeah, no, it's good stuff. Really, really good, insane stuff.
We would do this if it was the other way, though. It has to color what's happening here, how bad they screwed up the goaltending thing last year. Like, if they didn't screw up the goaltending in the first round series the way they did, I don't think this is even a conversation. But it was such a topic. You know, for all I'd say, like, the Leafs thing heading into the season was, how mean is Sheldon Keefe allowed to be to these guys? How much can he take them to task? The biggest question for the Bruins, like, obviously there were a lot of questions about how they'd bounce back, different team, but how are they going to handle their goalies? It's like the thing that has been the question du jour all year long for them.
God, it is just, for all the culture conversations we have about the Boston Bruins and the incredible leadership of Brad Marchand, like the idea of like maybe even a little bit of discord somewhere. And they love each other, and it's a great celebration. Like, if you're just looking at it dispassionately.
No, I'm not.
Between the Hallmark and Swayman.
I think it's not great, actually. I hate it.
I think it's kind of cool.
No.
And those guys seem to like each other. But, yeah, Devin's right. Like, at the end of that game, well, before game one, he's like, finally, I start game one. But it's like, yeah, I'm good to go. Mm-hmm. I can start again. It's fine.
Yeah, it also just the goalie hugs reminds me too much of the low fives with, like, PK and Carey Price. Mm-hmm. So, that's just, I don't like it. I'm out.
Okay.
I refuse to look dispassionately at it. I'm looking very passionately at it, and it's hatred is the passion that it's listening out of me.
PK with a viral moment on
I actually
ESPN's.
Didn't look at that video you sent it to me, and I was like, okay, I got the gist of it, and then I forgot to look back at it. So, again, I know what I'll be doing in the break.
Yeah, we can talk about it then, because it's not suitable for air. All right, when we come back, Luke Gazdick, former NHL forward, currently Sportsnet analyst. As the Fan Morning Show continues, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Oh, it's a long wait between games 3 and 4 in Toronto, because obviously it's Toronto Maple Leafs. They got to play on Hockey Night in Canada. Jim Montgomery, so disappointed about that.
I complain all the time. Good job, NHL schedulers. You know, I like my Saturday nights. Yeah. Good job.
Yeah, and no one's...
I almost went full grapes there. Like, good job by you.
Yeah. Well, you did.
I just did, yeah.
Jim Montgomery can't be mad at the Saturday night of it all. I guess I can hear the argument that yesterday's game could have been played today, so you can spend an extra day in Boston. I don't know. If it's me, like, I think the Four Seasons is fine.
Yeah, quit your crying.
Or the Ritz-Carlton.
Yeah, wherever.
I think they're saying the Ritz.
Yeah.
Luke Fox letting the cat out of the bag in his most recent on Sportsnet.ca, that's where Brad Marchand was.
Yeah, I will say, I wish we had a little more, like, soccer in us. Like, I'd love to hear a story. Like, I would never say anyone should do
fireworks?
This, obviously. But, like, well, that's the problem with, like, NHLers staying in, like, you know, like... palatial estates such as Ritz-Carlton or Four Seasons is like, it's kind of hard to gum up everybody else's stay there. Yeah. Some of those people get a little upset, but like, a little fire alarm, little pots and pans in the hallway. Uh-huh. Oh, God, if we only had the soccer of it all.
Yeah, probably not, though. No. All right, let's talk to Luke Gazdick, former NHL forward, Sportsnet analyst. How's it going, Luke?
Good, fellas. How we doing today?
Doing all right. You have
sour? No, yeah. Not good. Angry, actually. I don't know why Ben's lying to you. Maybe he's fine. I'm not. That game made me mad, Luke.
It's not ideal. Not an ideal finish. Do you have any hotel stories where, opposing fans have pulled fire alarms or anything?
Oh, man, not off the top of my head. But I will say, you called them palatial estates. Like, I played 4 years in the American League before I got called up to the NHL. Mm-hmm. And it's just, like, such a crazy change of pace. It was like going from staying at, like, the Best Western with a roommate in Rockford, Illinois, to staying at the Ritz on the road it's a nice treat. I'm not going to lie. It was one of the best parts of playing in the league.
No, it's devastating. Jim Montgomery is devastated that it's happening. He's like, I'd rather stay in my king size bed with, you know, the garbage to take out. Right. Okay, whatever. Why can't the Maple Leafs score in this series? Hey, they had an offensive explosion in game two with three goals. It's 10 consecutive postseason games now where they've not scored more than three goals. The power play, obviously anemic yesterday as well, 0-for-5. Why can't the Leafs score?
Man, I wish I had the exact answer for you, but I think you nailed one of the reasons, and that's the power play going 0-for-5 is just unacceptable. I mean, they have the personnel to do it. And, like, I know I equate a lot of things back to Edmonton, but I watched the Edmonton game last night against LA, and they were taking away Draisaitl all night. So they adjusted. Like, they made adjustments on the fly and were trying different plays and had guys in motion. Like, they had pre-scouted their first game, which is something you generally do. You look at what works and what doesn't, and you adjust. And I just don't think the Leafs are doing that. I was not a power play expert by any means, but I did sit front row for hundreds of them and broke them down. And listen, they got to make some adjustments here. If you can at least get one out of those five, I mean, you're not going to have a chance in the series. And I know this is what people probably don't want to hear, but Jeremy Swayman is just unreal. The athleticism, he's been there for them for the both games that he started. It's like, it's just Toronto's one of those teams he has their number against, and they got to find a way. But man, it can be frustrating in games like that work so much on emotion and momentum, where you get these great chances and you just feel like he's been there for the Bruins every chance and opportunity that they've had.
Yeah, you're right. He feels infallible. The scary thing about goaltenders, especially once they start going like this in series, is that if you don't get to him early, it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy where he just gets stronger and stronger as this series goes along, and you feel like it's harder to do. Is it, you know, I think a lot of times when you talk about, and you know, we all agree, the idea of the Leafs needing to move more and not be so static and not be so set on the power play, but how much of it is just trying to get greasier? I mean, you see the second Bertuzzi goal, or not the second Bertuzzi goal, but the second goal scored by Bertuzzi. It's just off his leg. It does feel like they need a few of those to kind of go in against Swayman. I mean, Austin Matthews, yeah, if he gets a look, maybe he's able to get it by, but other than him, it doesn't feel like beating Swayman clean is really in the cards right now.
No, and I agree. I think that was like generally the solution that we always came to over 11 years pro. I heard it 100 times was, if you can't score goals, or if nothing's falling from the outside, it's just get it to the net, like more and more shot attempts. And Boston doesn't block a ton of shots. Like, for anyone that watched Vancouver, Nashville the other night, Nashville blocked, I think, 36 shots. It was crazy. Boston, I think they had 26 last night. That's not even a crazy number. And I just feel like you got to get everything towards the net. Get traffic in front. Like, Bert's always there. Johnny's good on the power play, but they should have a driver and just someone there all the time. And the more you can do that, something's going to fall here. This is a 7-game series, or looks like it should be, against a very evenly matched team, let's say that. And I just feel like the bounces will start to go if you create your own luck, sort of.
Sure. I mean, they lost a lot of winner-take-all elimination games in the first round before they finally won in Game 6 last year. But yeah, from your mouth to God's ears, we'll see. The officiating, I mean, it's hard to argue with the officiating when you get five power play chances and you don't score on any of them. But yeah, the one the first Bruins goal happens after, everyone, I think, would have been fine, honestly, if the whistle goes and it's Bertuzzi and Marchand going off at the same time, or before that, Austin Matthews being hogtied by Charlie McAvoy behind the net. But the Marchand of it all, and Sheldon Keefe after the game talking about how this guy is, he's so smart and good at eluding the whistle, has not taken a penalty this entire series. Is he officiated differently?
Oh, is he officiated differently? No, not really. I kind of agree with Sheldon in the sense that he's just really good at it. And, I mean, I watched it for the 4 years that I played against him. He just somehow manages to get on the positive side of the call every time. He's just really damn good at it. And it can be frustrating as ever. I thought they should have blown that down for sure, but they were kind of both trying to sell it. And this is not an excuse for Sammy, but I think Sammy expected a whistle as well. He didn't look like he was set when Frederick came down the wing. You got to have that. Gave me some flashbacks of Joe Nieuwendyk in 04 on Patrick Lalime, but you got to have
that one better.
Yeah, that was better for our side. But the Matthews one too, it's just like, they kind of talked about it on Sportsnet in between. It was like, what's the standard here? Because that's a clear, like, grab and hold. It's almost a WWE move by McAvoy. And I just, that's the one where I was just like, you try not to look at the refing all the time, but that's a penalty. Like, that's a penalty in the playoffs, regular season, whatever you want to call it. So I didn't love that either. But, yeah, Marshy just has a way. He has this way about him where he just always seems to come out on the positive side of it for the Bruins. And it can be frustrating as ever, but there's not really a solution to that either. I watched that live, man. He is the master at it.
Okay. I don't disagree. Like, he's certainly the master at getting away with it, but is it not a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy at this point? Like, you know, the two guys that have been kind of ringing in my brain, and obviously, well, Kadri finally has accomplished what Marchand has, but these guys aren't Brad Marchand, but it's Kadri and Bunting. And the thing I heard over and over and over again in both of their tenures with Toronto is the refs hate being made a fool of. They hate being tricked. They hate when guys make them look bad. And it is very odd to me. And, you know, it doesn't have to be about just those guys. I'm sure there are pests across the league that feel like they don't get the right due, that Brad Marchand is making the refs look bad. I think the fact that they give the makeup call immediately after is proof positive that they know that. I do wonder, and I don't think the answer is yes to this, but I do wonder if last night was a bit of a tipping point where we talk about the eyeballs on Toronto so much that it was pretty obvious that he is officiated in a different way. And is it a skill he has, or is he just officiated in a different way and now he's able to get away with it? That's the thing I can't kind of wrap my head around with Marchand, because I'm not taking anything away from him. You're right. He is able to get away with it. But isn't he able to get away with it because he's just able to get away with it and other guys aren't given that benefit of the doubt?
Yeah, well, regardless of the question, if you're on the Leafs side, you can't even put yourself in that position in the first place. You know, like, there were certain guys in the league, whether it was Marchie or Bunting was one of them. I played against him in the minors. But as soon as you get within 5 feet of them, you got to know that you can't put yourself in that situation. Whether it was Domi back in Boston or it was Bert last night or whoever it is, whenever you get within 2 to 5 feet of this guy, you know he's looking to draw one. And so you have to know that on your side. It's to me, it's just as much on the Leaf side as it is on Marchy getting the calls. Mm. It's just knowing and being aware that as soon as you get tangled with this guy, he's looking to draw one. Mm. So you can't even put yourself in that position in the first place. It's almost just like, leave him alone. Like, there were certain guys around the league where if you know you're going to do that, play him hard, but almost just let him sleep. Don't yap at him. Just kind of, Don't be looking to get over there, because you know he's looking for one.
So, we know what a Toronto Maple Leafs crowd is like on most occasions, and they were into it when things were going well and when bodies were flying and when goals were being scored. But yeah, there was certainly some moments in there where you wished it was louder. Tell me, Luke, from a player's perspective, how impactful is that? Because it feels like people on social media certainly believe it's impactful to the Leafs losing 5 consecutive postseason games at home.
So it's different for a lot of players. For me, I fed off the energy of the crowd. That was just the way I was. I played at a very high drive where I was amped up. I was fired up, ready to go. And I would almost use the energy and emotion from the crowd to get me going, whether it was hitting someone and hearing the crowd cheer behind you, even on the road, like road buildings used to really, really get me going. Not every player's like that, though. And this will sound crazy, but some players don't even necessarily care. They don't notice it. They don't notice how many people are there or if they were loud or not. Some guys are, I don't want to say more dialed into the game, but I just want to say for some guys, it matters more than others. And I just think, man, if you're at home, I had a couple buddies at the game in the building last night. Actually, one of my buddies, Matt Fitzgibbons, he's probably listening. He's a big fan of your show. They said it was a bit overblown. It was a bit overblown online, but still, man, it's tough. You look at Edmonton, you look at Winnipeg, you look at Vancouver, and even Boston was great when they were on the road. Like, I kind of wish we were like that sometimes. I don't need rally towels or the whiteout, but I mean, the ongoing joke with us is the Platinums, right? Like on TV, you look at the Platinum sections and they're empty for the first 5 minutes of the period. And going into the playoffs, I'm like, oh, this will probably be different, electric crowd. And then last night's the same thing. Like the whole bottom of the lower bowl is empty when they're 3 minutes into, you know, game three. And that's even frustrating for me as a fan and like as a kid, you know, growing up here and knowing how crazy it was. And like the early 2000s, it was an absolute zoo in there. So that can be frustrating. And I don't really know if it matters in the whole sense of the whole team. I feel like more guys were the opposite of me, that they didn't need the crowd. They were just more zoned into the game. I personally loved a loud and roaring crowd behind me. That it got me going a little more.
Yeah, the thing I've been talking about with the crowd this morning is like, I echo what a lot of people have been saying. Like, yeah, of course, you wish it was more raucous. You wish it was an Edmonton, a Winnipeg. But I've also, it's also not lost on me. I mean, maybe less so Winnipeg, but Vancouver went to a cup final in 2011. The Oilers been to a conference final. It's not just doom and gloom in those other buildings. And I think that's the part of it that is kind of lost in this conversation is that, yeah, the fans can be proactive, but when the last five times you've seen your team come into your barn in the games that matter the most, you lose. It's only human nature to be a little pensive. And God, it's like, I love the game he played after this, but Benoit taking the puck over the glass penalty. If I'm sitting in the building, I could be as excited as anybody. And guess what? My butt's getting pretty tight the second you got to kill a penalty that early into the game. So like, I agree with you. I'd love to see a more raucous crowd, but I also think it's partially on the team. Cause I mean, you look at when Reeves is running around and Benoit takes Pasternak's head off, I don't think anybody was complaining about the lack of energy in the building there.
No, I agree with you too. I kind of thought of that as soon as I said early 2000s, it was a zoo. The brand of hockey was definitely a lot better.
Yeah.
Or not better, just different, right?
They won.
When you had Ty Domi and Gary Roberts and Darcy Tucker running around, hitting everything that moved, and you had Captain Matt scoring clutch goals, that's an easy team to get on board with. And maybe it is just a disconnect between the team and the style and the way they've played and the lack of success that's attributing to that. But it's a chicken or the egg thing, right? It's which one's going to come first. And I don't know. I don't want to say it's disappointing, but you know what I mean? Being a kid growing up here and then obviously watching playoff hockey, you see it across the league. You kind of, you wish a little bit.
Yeah. There's no question about it. Yeah. Yep. Luke, this is always spectacular having you on the radio. And shout out to your buddy Matt.
Yeah, we're fans of his, too.
Hey, by the way, did we actually start Addison Barger in left field? Has he never played a professional inning in left field?
That's true. That
not, not only not a professional inning, he said he'd never played it in his life. Like, never in Little League, like, never played it before. He's like, I'm sure it's the same. And then when that first ball was flying at him, he's like, it's not the same. It's different. It's very different.
Just nightmare written all over it, late in the half. And this Jays team, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, I had to ask you guys. I know you guys are the experts, but I just wanted to clarify that.
Thanks, buddy. We'll talk again soon.
All right. Talk to you guys.
Luke Gazdick, former NHL forward, currently a Sportsnet analyst, buddy Matt in the building yesterday.
Yeah, we also joke a lot about, it's like, oh, that Homer media. No, the Homer media that exists is every NHL insider caring infinitely more about the Blue Jays than whatever team you think they're a homer for. It's like my favorite thing in the like Marco Estrada era Blue Jays was any time a like kind of knuckle pucky point shot went in, or they go, oh, that's that Estrada changeup. It was across the league from Arizona to Montreal. It did not matter. Across the continent, you were getting Blue Jays references. So yeah, it never stops being hilarious to me.
Do you know what the score is 5-on-5 between these two teams through three games?
I'm gonna hate this answer so much.
It's 5-5.
Five-five. Oh, okay. That was gonna be worse. I gotta be.
Yeah,
honest.
You thought.
I thought it was just gonna be like 5-0 or something. Like,
No.
Yeah.
It's 5-5. So it's you can't say that. Hey, the Leafs are dominating 5-on-5, and it's the power play that's undoing it.
No,
but the
you can't.
Difference between these two teams has been the power play, because the Bruins are outscoring the Leafs 5-1 there, which is like that's dominating.
Yep.
And the 5-1. Okay, let's make it 4-1, because I don't count the last power play goal into the empty net yesterday.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, no, that doesn't count. A 4-1. They have one fewer opportunity, do the Bruins, than the Leafs in this series as well. So I know, like, it's not fair to just count up the power plays and talk about the officiating that
right.
way.
Because, you know, if one team's committing more penalties, then...
Yeah, but that's the way
I know.
Officials work, man. The idea that it's going to be pretty close power play opportunities for both teams, no matter how the series is played, is that's true. And also, it's, like, I think we've talked about, and like Justin Bourne said, like, the Leafs are the more physical team, like, the team that is going to benefit most by a lack of power plays. I mean... mostly because their penalty kill stinks, but also because they're the team more on that edge.
Like, their power play also stinks too.
It's just both of that. But yeah, it's God. Like, how can that one area that is so there's a couple of through lines through the last 8 years of postseason play.
Mm-hmm.
It's been not getting the better goaltender.
Yes,
and it's like the goaltender hasn't sunk the Maple Leafs. Unless you want to point to Jack Campbell and the Canadiens series and, like, the Game 7 of it all.
Plenty other fingers pointing.
He did have a sub-900 save percentage in that series. But other than that, it's not like the goaltending has sunk them, but it's just they've been out-goaltended.
Mm-hmm.
And then this vaunted special teams and power play that was supposed to be the toughness just hasn't shown up. And go back to 2019, and that was a Patrice Bergeron Bruins team, but... The number one differentiating factor in that 7-game series is the two power play discrepancies. It's just that how can we be here again?
Mm-hmm.
How?
Yeah, they've changed the power play coach a million times. They brought in the, like, seemingly 500th guy that's going to fix it, Guy Boucher. I'm not going to blame him. I blame Manny Malhotra. It wasn't his fault. Spencer Carberry, he turned this power play into a head coaching job somehow, and now there's another guy running it. But guess what? It's not the coach's fault, okay? When you have $50 million a player, we'll lump Morgan Riley into this. He's going to be on the power play unit. When you got $50 million of talent in a league where the cap is 80 on the ice at any given time, it's pretty hard for me to sit here and talk about systems or they're not being coached properly. At a certain point in time, you got to find a way. And again, didn't feel like it for vast majority of the season. Seventh best power play in the NHL this year. So no reason it shouldn't happen. And every team that's ahead of them, you think of them as great teams.
Yeah. And there's like little glimpses. Again, like the first 25, 30 seconds of the first power play yesterday, I was like, that's it.
Then what
happened?
There it
is. They gave up a short-handed breakaway.
Great.
And they scored a pretty important power play goal in game two, but that's the one.
Yeah.
You need
the game they won?
Yeah.
Anyway. Try it again.
Yeah. All right. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of the Fan Morning Show. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590 Fan.
Good morning.